As today's storm approached, Governor Deval Patrick held a news conference to talk about what residents of the Cape and other coastal communities should be prepared for.
We expect down power lines, of course, and we are doing everything we can to be able to assess that damage and respond to it quickly and make repairs. But please cooperate with the repair crews and stay away from the down power lines yourselves. And as I mentioned earlier, the riptides and strong currents are expected and will be a serious hazard to swimmers and boaters.
Patrick has gotten pretty high marks for leading the Bay State through emergencies like the water main break earlier this year. But he's only on the job for another few months unless he wins re-election in November. And that's not a sure bet, given the tough economy and the anti-incumbent sentiment around the country. But new poll numbers out today seem to be good news for Patrick. Although, depending on how you crunch the numbers, there could also be some good news for Republican challenger Charlie Baker. That's one topic we'll be discussing in this week's News Roundtable. Also, the state attorney general's office finished its review of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center CEO Paul Levy's so-called inappropriate relationship with a female employee. Levy had been fined $50,000 for that lapse of judgment, as the hospital's board called it. And the AG's office criticized the board for not addressing the situation sooner, since some board members had known about the relationship for years. Now at least one union is saying Levy wasn't punished heavily enough. Joining us to talk about all the week's big stories is Peter Kanellis, editorial page editor at the Boston Globe. Thanks for joining us, Peter.
Thank you.
And WBUR reporter Monica Brady-Myra. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Sasha.
Let's start with those new numbers out today in the governor's race. It's a Rasmussen poll, and it shows that Governor Patrick has maintained his lead over Charlie Baker. Patrick is ahead with about 39% of the vote. Baker has about 34%. Now, independent Tim Cahill comes in at just 18%. Those numbers are virtually unchanged from earlier in the summer. But this poll also asked undecided voters questions, and those are the people who might be a little unsure about their first choice candidate. When those so-called leaners are counted, the gap narrows. They're about Patrick and Baker about 2% apart. So here's Scott Rasmussen to explain that.
What the leaners tell us, and again, these are people who either were initially undecided or people who said, yeah, you know, I'd like to vote for Cahill, but I'll change my mind. You know, when we push those things, the race becomes closer. That means there is potential. It means the race is fluid. It means that this is far from a sure thing for Deval Patrick, even though he is the front runner.
Peter Kanellis of the Globe, can you tell us how you interpret these numbers?
Well, I think they're confirmation of what we kind of know just by talking to people and by being around the state, which is that, you know, it's a very difficult climate for incumbents. People have probably felt like Deval Patrick has sort of put together a better case for himself in the last year. And, you know, people are sort of sticking with him, at least a plurality are sort of sticking with him while waiting to find out more about Charlie Baker. And that's sort of where we are, I think.
Now, Patrick actually had a surge of fundraising success last month. He raised almost $1 million, which is twice what Baker raised. So Peter Kanellis, what about that? What's going on there?
Well, this is a heavily Democratic state, and the governor's also a friend of the president. And there's, you know, lots of people who are willing to come forward and help him. He's a great campaigner. He's a popular person. But keep in mind that in addition to what Baker himself raises, there are many outside groups that are there to help his candidacy. So we saw earlier in this cycle, the Republican Governors Association did those damaging ads against Cahill to drive down Cahill's support, which is probably been the most consequential thing so far in the race. So Baker's going to get a lot of help. He's not going to have trouble competing.
Listeners, do you think Governor Patrick is vulnerable? Were you a Patrick supporter who's now thinking of casting your vote for someone else? Or if you'd rather talk hospital politics, tell us whether you think Beth Israel's CEO is in the clear now that the AG's office has finished its review, or whether you think his job could or should still be at risk. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Monica Brady-Myra, Peter Kanellis just mentioned ads. Labor Day weekend is traditionally the start of the most intense period of campaigning, but really we haven't seen a lot yet. What about that?
Well, we've seen a lot from Baker and Cahill, and we saw two more today, actually two from Cahill, one from Baker, really sort of kicking off, as you say, the real political season as we get closer to the election. And it's interesting, Baker today in his ad just blames Patrick and Cahill, lumps them together, almost makes them sound like it's governor and lieutenant governor. He doesn't refer to him as treasurer. He just calls them Patrick and Cahill for sending everything up to New Hampshire and raising taxes races 8 times. No real details on that. And, you know, one political strategist I spoke to, a Democrat, said, you know, reminded me that Baker, you know, was the Secretary of Administration and Finance under Governor Weld. He helped oversee the big dig. He doesn't mention any of that in his advertisements. And then Cahill's got 2 new ads out today. One is about why he dropped out of the Democratic Party and is running as an independent. And again, he hits on Patrick for raising taxes. And he says for the Republicans, the big dig, enough said. The other one is of his daughters. And it's kind of a nice, homey feel of all the things they learned from his dad about don't be wasteful, watch your money. Another one was leave a party if people behave badly. And
so Cahill is Family Guy.
He's always the Family Guy in these ads. You know, I don't know whether it's working or not for him because we haven't seen his poll numbers move that much. But we also haven't seen Deval Patrick much on the airwaves. And, you know, people I've talked to said this might be the strategy to just see how it's going. No reason to jump in just yet. Hang on to the ads and the cash and give it a little more time before he makes his big footprint on the airwaves.
Peter Kanellis, any ads you've seen that you have a take on?
Well, I think it's smart that Cahill has begun advertising now. A lot of people credit Cahill with not spending a lot of money in response to the Republican Governors Association ads. What happened was a couple of months ago, they really started attacking him heavily to drive down his favorability. A lot of people felt like that was an attempt to kind of flush him out, to get him to use his money early and then leave him kind of vulnerable later on. He didn't blink then, but I do think that it's a smart idea for him. You know, as the independent, as a person with roughly half as much support as the other two candidates, for him to now try to get on the airwaves, introduce himself, you know, make himself a factor in this race. So from his standpoint, this is a good move.
Listeners, give us a call if you want to weigh in on how the governor's race is going so far, or if you want to talk later about Beth Israel CEO Paul Levy and how he's been in the news this week. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have a Craig calling from Worcester. Hi, Craig.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. So have you, you know who you're going to vote for?
Oh, I certainly am. I'll be voting for Deval Patrick and Tim Murray. I'm a proud member of Local 33, the Roofers and Waterproof Union in Boston, Massachusetts. I live in Worcester, and I'm very excited about the race. And I'll tell you, I don't have to look too much further than we're building a new $302 million state hospital in Worcester that Deval and Tim were instrumental in getting the funding for, both federal and state money. And also, the CSX trains, they're moving the intermodal unit. They're leaving Boston, and they're going to be coming to Worcester. There's just a lot of great stuff. The City Square project is happening. People are going back to work here in Worcester, and it's a direct result, I believe, in the Patrick Murray administration.
But, Craig, there have been many union members who really have a problem with Patrick this year. You're obviously separate from them.
Well, I would say, I mean, understandably, some of the police unions are up in arms because of the flagman issue. And the Quinn bill issue, I think, and the quarry reform, I think that they're a little upset about that because they're looking at their bottom line as far as, and I can understand that, but, you know, it's in a tough economic time, the governor saw a way that, I mean, it works for a lot of other states, and he was just trying to save money, so I can see where Scott Brown did get a lot of votes from police unions as opposed to Martha Coakley, because I think that people wanted to send that message that they, you know, about that. But, you know, I mean...
So, Craig, even though his failure to get the casino bill went through, and that means jobs that we hoped would be there won't be there, again, you're not rattled by that?
Well, I look more towards what Sal DeMacy did, blocking that initially, and it come out he was on the take the whole time, and then the other guy who blocked it there with the Racino bills, you know, the governor would have been happy to sign it, but they kept pushing through that. They're trying to get it their way. And I kind of give him credit for sticking to his guns and saying that he didn't want the Racinos, that he wanted 3 major resort-style casinos that would be destination points, not just the Racinos.
Great.
So I do think they will be built in time. I just think it's unfortunate that they all couldn't come together on it. But I look back at the time when DeMacy blocked it, and I think it's all his fault to begin with.
Craig, thanks for the call. We really appreciate it. Peter Kanellis, your feeling about where Deval Patrick stands with unions?
I think that he's walking a very narrow path, and this is sort of a crucial kind of crux for his campaign, in that the general public, the vast majority of the general public, you know, is angry and is looking for cost-cutting and efficiency out of government. And a lot of the efficiency comes at the expense of public employee unions. And Patrick has done a good job of kind of embracing that message and being tough on those public employee unions. But he can't really throw away the whole labor agenda. You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, he's the labor candidate in this. And the question is, does he go too far in appeasing unions and alienate all of the independent-minded voters? Or does he go too far in cracking down on unions and undermine his core supporters? It's a very tough dynamic for him.
Monica Brady-Myrov, let's not ignore Tim Cahill here. He's actually pulling fairly far behind, 18%. Is he becoming irrelevant, or is he actually a key spoiler?
Well, the number may seem irrelevant, but he's key in this race. I mean, he is playing this pivotal role because if he dropped out, it would be a two-person race, and he's appealing to the same type of voters that Baker is, Reagan Democrats. He says he's a fiscal and social conservative, and if he were to leave, it's likely that most of the votes would go to Baker, put him ahead. Or even if Baker were to leave, most of his votes would go to Cahill. So you could argue both men are very important in this race in very different ways.
Let's move on to Paul Levy, the Beth Israel Medical Center Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center CEO. This week, the AG's office released the results of its investigation into this inappropriate relationship he had had with one of his female employees. The issue was whether the hospital misused charitable funds, and that refers to the money the hospital spent to pay that female employee's salary and severance. The AG found that the hospital did not err there. But Martha Coakley did say, actually, Peter, in an interview with your newspaper, that the hospital's board should do some soul searching, as she put it, and rethink its decision to keep Levy as CEO. We asked Levy back in May, when he was on our show and when the story first broke, if he'd consider stepping down on his own.
I have not considered resigning. First of all, because although I agree that I made a mistake, I don't think that it offsets what I can still bring to the hospital and to the people who work here.
Peter Kalelis, do you think the AG's report this week is the end of this, or could we still see Levy forced out over this inappropriate relationship?
Well, I think it's probably the end of it as a big sort of news focus and crisis. But I think we've also seen that people both within and outside of Beth Israel were kind of bothered by it, taken aback by it. There's so much pressure on hospitals these days anyway that this kind of confirms a lot of people's feelings that things are handled in kind of a wasteful, informal way, and that these organizations need to get their acts together and the people who are currently running them aren't really on top of things. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is starting a ball that's going to be rolling and may end in Levy's resignation. But it's not going to happen in a kind of, scandal in which the Attorney General is going to hound him out of office.
And Monica Brady-Myrov, do you have a take on this?
Well, Levy has been such a strong leader for more transparency among hospitals. He is the most outspoken hospital president in the city and has a national reputation, a national following with his blog, How to Running a Hospital. And he's really been a leader among really being clear about hospital infection rates and costs, just putting Beth Israel head and shoulders above others. So the view I've heard is that the rest of this can roll off. The analogy I hear is that Monica Lewinsky and President Bill Clinton is that while this has soiled his reputation, no doubt, but he brings such fundraising power as well and transparency and is such a good administrator of the hospital that most likely he will not resign over this.
So the people you've heard from say he's going to survive this thing. Finally, before our time runs out, let's do our Friday hubbub where we talk about the one story this week that really caught our attention. And Monica, let's start with you.
Happy birthday, Whitey Bulger.
Whoa, it was his birthday.
It's his birthday today.
How
turns
old?
81. You know, it's been 15 years since the FBI has been looking for him. He's, up for 19 murders and racketeering charges. There's a new FBI director in town who's still asserting the desire to catch Whitey Bulger, $2 million reward. And it just amuses me that he's still out there, that nobody's seen this guy.
Occasional pictures, supposedly.
Well, maybe, lots of plastic surgery, but who over 80 wouldn't want plastic surgery?
And Peter Kanellis, what's your hubbub?
This is not a happy hubbub, unfortunately. This is a very tragic event. This is the slaying of the Domino's pizza delivery man just in the last couple of days. But I think what's been heartening about it, the only heartening thing about it, is the way neighbors quickly stepped forward to try to help the police in this investigation. A woman came forward to say that, that she may have unwittingly let one of the killers use her cell phone. And I think it's also struck a resonant chord throughout a lot of people. And you know, every so often these really horrific crimes, you know, become kind of crystallizing moments for people. And this one sort of has the potential to do that.
You're right. It's sort of the opposite of that code of silence we've seen in places like Charlestown where things happen and no one wants to speak up when the police come around.
Yeah, people are genuinely outraged on this.
And, well, my hubbub is much lighter, actually, and it's bedbug related. You know, this is obviously move-in season. All this excess furniture
on the
sidewalks.
I see you itching.
Oh. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, maybe I'm just too far from my college years, but I just, the idea that someone would take a used mattress off the sidewalk, you know, not from a friend or relative, but off the sidewalk. You know, Mayor Menino has been spending time in Alston, Brighton, telling people not to pick up discarded furniture. And we have some tape of a mother of an incoming college student commenting on this.
I don't want him bringing bugs back to my house Thanksgiving and Christmas. He'll have to sleep outside.
So the message here is if you see a mattress on the sidewalk, leave it there. Thank you, WBUR's Monica Brady-Myrov and Peter Kanellis, editorial page editor of the Boston Globe. Thanks again for joining us on Radio Boston.
Thank you, Sasha.
Thanks.
Coming up, as students around the state get set to return to the classroom, we'll be joined by Boston Public School Superintendent Carol Johnson, who's here to take your questions at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.